Blog Talk Radio.
We want to thank attorney Abode Ayob, the legal director for the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee, for being our guest on June 7th. We want to continue our conversation today with the ADC National President, Warren David. ADC just finished their annual conference last month, and Warren will give highlights and share insights on issues and trends facing the Arab American community. I'm also excited because we want to give you the many reasons why my new book is right for you and a must read for everyone who has a personal interest in diversity or multiculturalism. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. Hello, my friends. This is Carol Copeland Thomas. You're listening to Focus on Empowerment, and we are glad that you joined us today. Just want to remind you that anyone can listen to this program live two ways. Number one, I have a limited number of phone lines that you can call and listen to the show live in the mute category. The phone number is 646-727-2766. That number again is 646-727-2766. Or any number of people can listen to the show online by going to www.blogtalkradio.com/globalcarol. Again, that number is www.blogtalkradio.com/Global Carol, and that's GlobalCarole. The great thing is that if you can't listen to the show live, we actually broadcast between 1 and 1:30 Eastern Daylight Time, since we're in the summertime, and it switches back to Eastern Standard Time in the month of October. You can always play back any of the shows at your convenience 24/7 by going to that same website, www.blogtalkradio.com/Global Carol. And the exciting thing is that every single program that we have broadcast since 2010 is at that website. You can listen to any one of them, either the full program, some of our programs earlier were 1 hour in length, or you can listen to our half-hour versions, gain information. I've actually gone back and played some of them and said, boy, that's really good information. We've had a variety of guests on, and that's the beauty of online radio. As you know, I was on the radio here in the Boston market for a number of years, starting back in 1999. I actually was on the air live during September 11th, broadcasting live. So I've had a radio experience and background for a number of years, but I love the internet because of the flexibility and the fact that you can listen to this radio show either live or you can certainly listen at your convenience. So we encourage you to spread the word and tell your friends about Focus on Empowerment so that they can gain knowledge, they can become a part of our experience and learn an awful lot about the world around them, both from an international perspective and definitely a local perspective. Well, I'm excited because my new book is definitely out, 21 Ways to Bring Multiculturalism to Your Job, Your Home, and Your Community. I'm going to bring you excerpts of the book and why it is an important resource for every single person. We'll talk about that after we bring information from our guest today. So I'm excited about that, and I'm always excited about those who are signing up for our cultural cruise that will take place on April 13th through the 20th, 2013. That's next year, a few months from now. A simple $250 deposit down will reserve your spot, and then you pay monthly until your balance is paid off. We do have people who have signed up already. It's going to be a very exciting cruise. Dr. Ada McKenzie is going to be our cruise leader and talk about the various Caribbean islands, particularly those that we are going to visit, Puerto Rico, St. Martin's, and St. Kitts. So it's going to be an educational experience, but also a fun experience too. So you can find out more about that at msconnect.com. That's for Multicultural Symposium Series. MS, the letters for S as in symposium, S as in series, msconnect.com to learn more about the Cultural Caribbean Cruise next April. I'm very excited about it and all that it's going to bring for those who will attend. Well, I'm excited to bring on board our very special guest. We were hoping that he was going to be able to join us last month, but he had an urgent meeting that he had to attend, and he was gracious enough to come back on board today. We're talking about the president of the Arab American Anti-Discrimination Committee, just finished his national conference a month ago. We'll hear about that and all of the other particulars related to his community. Warren David, thank you so much for being a guest on my program.
Oh, thank you, Carol. It's a pleasure to be here.
Super. Will you just give us a basic definition from your perspective? What is an Arab? What is an Arab, and obviously what is an Arab American? Because some people are a little confused about that in terms of its cultural relevance and ethnicity as well.
Mm. Well, when you say the word Arab, Arab is a very diverse term, because in the Arab world there are 22 Arab countries in the Arab world, and you have Arabs that come from North Africa to the Levant, to the Arabian Gulf, and you have Muslims, and you have Christians, and you have many, many ethnicities and different religious persuasions. So the Arab, an Arab is anybody who comes from the Arab world and speaks the Arabic language. And there's a difference between the Arab world and the Middle East, because many times people refer to the Middle East and the Arab world synonymously, and they're really different, because the Middle East includes countries like Turkey and Israel and Iran.
Right.
You could even put Afghanistan maybe in the Middle East, whereas the Arab world are the 22 Arab countries.
That's a great distinction, because many people think that Iran is an Arab country, and it's not. It's a Persian country. Is that not true, Warren?
That's right, and the language that they speak is Farsi, and not Arabic. Yet, you know, there are Muslims in Iran, so many people will kind of, you know, because of the religion, because of Islam, they'll kind of tag it as an Arab country. But a very interesting tidbit is that only 25% of the Muslims in the world are in the Arab world.
Wow.
And the other 75% are in countries like Iran and Afghanistan, and even further in Indonesia and Malaysia and China. And there's over 1 billion Muslims in the world, but only 25% in the Arab world. And another thing, it's important to a distinction, is that not all Arabs are Muslim, and not all Muslims are Arab, as I mentioned earlier, because there are many religious groups, like, for instance, Christianity. In Egypt, for instance, it's over 10% of the population. In Lebanon, it's maybe 40%, 50% of the population, and so forth.
So what I'm hearing you say is we're talking about cultures, ethnicities, and religious distinctions that either a person can identify as an Arab or doesn't identify, because they are, in the case of Iran, they're Persian, and they speak Farsi, a different language, yet they can be Muslim. So different distinctions, but geographically in the same area, but it doesn't mean that they're the same people.
Right, and you see in the United States, the immigrants that came here to the United States is kind of like a microcosm of the Arab world, and you have the ethnicities here from Egypt and Lebanon and Palestine and Iraq and so forth, and you have the different religious groupings. There's a little bit more in the United States. The demo is a little bit different in the Middle East. More than half of the population is Christian. It's kind of the opposite of the Middle East.
Right,
because a lot of Christians did immigrate here, as well as Muslims.
And also, I gave this quiz question on June 7th when your legal director was our guest, but I'll give it again, and I'll give the, I want you to give the answer. The largest population of Arabs outside of the Middle East happened to be in a city in the United States. And Warren, what city is that?
That's Detroit, and that's the largest concentration of Arab Americans in the United States is in Detroit. Actually, I before becoming the president of ADC just a year ago, I lived in Detroit, in Michigan, for over 30 years, and I was very active in the Arab community there. There was about 350,000 Arab Americans in the metro Detroit area. You've probably heard of Dearborn, which is a suburb of Detroit, which has a huge concentration of Lebanese, mostly from the south of Lebanon. But there are, you know, that's just one concentration in the Detroit area. The Detroit area in general has about 350,000 Arabs. The three biggest states in the United States where you find concentrations of Arab Americans, Michigan is one, and then New York, I should say New York and New Jersey, that region, and then thirdly California. Those are the three that are about maybe 35% of the population in the United States.
That's good information, and we talked earlier last month because I am from Detroit, and when you say Dearborn, I have such memories. It's just amazing just because years ago when I was growing up in the 50s and in the early 60s, a person of color would work in Dearborn, maybe for the auto industry or work in someone's home, but you definitely would not live in Dearborn. It was an all-white community. Mayor Hubbard was the mayor, and he vehemently rejected any person of color who lived in that town. So I'm sure he's probably rolling over in his grave right now, knowing that there's so many Arab Americans living in his town.
And African Americans as well.
That's
it's
right.
It's a different Dearborn than what it was in the 50s and 60s. It's so true of what you're saying as far as when you grew up. But it's changed, and it has become much more diverse.
So true. So true. And, Warren, you are of Syrian and Lebanese. Your background is Syrian and Lebanese as well, correct?
Yes, originally. And actually, I grew up in Rhode Island, not too far from Boston. And
right.
My grandparents came in the first wave. There have been three waves of immigration in the Arab American community. The first wave, when my grandparents came, were in the late 1800s, early 1900s. A lot from the Levant, from when we say the Levant, Syria, Lebanon, Palestine, Jordan, from those areas, that came at the turn of the last century. And they came primarily for economic reasons, one of which was the collapse of the silk industry in Syria. And secondly, that was during the Ottoman Empire, when the area was actually occupied by the Turks. Many of my grandparents, as an example, did not want to fight, in the army and so forth. So it was, and the United States was at that time, was streets paved with gold and a great opportunity. So they chose to immigrate to the United States. And many went to South America as well. In fact, today there are about 4 million, close to 4 million Arab Americans in the United States. In South America, there's 15 million in South America. Yes.
Wow.
It's amazing. Well, because they South America... Many Arab immigrants went there before they went to the United States, or many that who could not come to the United States would go to South America and countries like Argentina and Venezuela. Yeah. And South America, like in Brazil, I think there's something like over 7 or 8 million Lebanese just in Brazil alone.
Hmm.
Yeah. But getting back to the immigrants that came to this country, that was the first wave were my grandparents. So I'm like a third-generation Arab American. And then there was a second wave. Right after World War II, in the 50s, 60s, we call that the brain drain. And most of the Arab immigrants who came at that time came for different reasons, more for education. Many of them stayed. They became physicians, engineers, and so forth. And then the third wave were these immigrants came for political reasons. And many of them were refugees, the Lebanese Civil War, in the 70s, the Iraq War, we had many Yemenis that came, Iraqis, I just said Iraqis, Somalians. We have a huge Somalian community that's come. And those are all in the last 30 years or so that have come more for political reasons. Palestinians as well.
And I would imagine that when you look at Steve Jobs' father was Syrian. He came here for graduate school, and he probably came during that era in the 50s and 60s and met his wife and married, and Steve was born. So it sort of fits in with the categories that you've talked about as well.
Yeah, he came during the brain drain, exactly.
Yes.
Abdel Fattah Jendali was his name,
mm-hmm.
and that was his biological father, and he came to study and was doing a PhD, I believe.
Right.
And, you're right, exactly. Came in that
yeah.
era.
And even, we could go on and talk about this. In Boston, there is a region of Boston, in downtown Boston, right next to Chinatown, that had a heavy concentration of Syrian. The Syrian community lived in that area until the expressway came and then moved them, relocated them. But there is a history in our city in terms of the Syrians who lived in the area. So we could go on and on about that. And
I think you're talking about Shawmut Avenue, I think.
Yes, that's right.
Right, exactly. Yes, I'm very familiar with that. That was the area where Khalil Gibran actually
mm-hmm.
settled when he came to Boston.
That's true. That is true. We just had our family reunion this weekend, and we actually referenced him. We took our family on a tour of Boston, and we referenced Khalil Gibran. Absolutely. Right.
Yes.
So tell us about the your organization, the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee, and the convention that you just held last month.
Right. ADC is an organization that was founded over 32 years ago, in 1980, by former Senator James Abaresk, who was the first Arab American senator back in the 70s from Sioux City, South Dakota. He represented mm-hmm. South Dakota in the Senate. At that time, in the mid-70s, there was an operation that was basically put together executed by the FBI, where they had dressed up FBI agents as these greedy oil-rich sheikhs. It was called Abscam, for Arab Scam. You might remember that, Abscam.
Yeah.
And it was kind of hilarious to members of the Arab community, because they dressed up these agents like they looked like cartoon characters, you know, where they had these sunglasses and, you know, like they had the robes and, you know, they called them Abdullah, and, you know, they had beards and everything. And what they were set up to go out, and it was a scam to go after congressmen and induce them basically to, you know, take a bribe.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened is some of these congressmen actually bought them and thought they were real.
Hmm.
And it was really a big slap in the face, you know, to the Arab community and the Arab American community.
Right.
And at that point, Abaresk said, you know what, enough is enough. He had been thinking about this for a number of years about, you know, because there was no civil rights organization at that time for Arab Americans, like similar to the NAACP. And so he started ADC and immediately went out on the road and started traveling and meeting Arab Americans all over the country and opening chapters, and it just became people welcomed it. They welcomed it, and they saw that there was a great need to have a civil rights organization for Arab Americans. To put what ADC does in, you know, I can put it, we call it the three Ps. We protect, we promote, and we preserve.
Mm-hmm.
We protect the civil rights, you know, of Arab Americans.
Right.
We promote mutual understanding through education, through the educational programs that we do, and thirdly, we preserve the Arab cultural heritage,
mm-hmm.
and that's basically, in a nutshell, what ADC does. Our convention, as you mentioned, just passed June 21st to the 24th, and every year we have a convention theme, and we've been doing our convention for the last 32 years. It's an annual event. And we do it in Washington, D.C. This year's theme was Taking Charge, Moving Forward, Decision 2012. So you can imagine, because of the election.
That was the election. Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. So that was a big theme for us, and we kind of centered the whole convention on a lot of the domestic issues that are confronting Arab Americans. It's a four-day event. We started with an advocacy day on Capitol Hill on the Thursday of the convention, and we had a orientation session for Arab Americans who had come in early give them speaking points, talking points of things, how they can approach their elected representative in Congress, the hotel was just right around the corner from the Rayburn building, and the office buildings where the congressional representatives are. After
right.
that, many of them went to Capitol Hill, met with their respective congressmen, and then in the evening we had a beautiful dinner right in the Senate itself, in one of the chambers, and had a debriefing session. So that was kind of an exciting thing. And then the convention itself, you know, was launched on Friday, and we had a lot of different events. But we started with a White House town hall meeting, and it was pretty exciting where the White House came to the convention, and two key advisors were there. One is a deputy national security advisor, advisor Ben Rhodes, and then the executive director of it's the White House Business Council. His name is Ari Matusiak. And, you know, they spoke about domestic and foreign policy issues. And then there was a Q&A period after with members of the, you know, with the some of the convention delegates that were there. So that was pretty exciting. We had a, which was really interesting, in the afternoon we had Michael Moore. I'm thinking a lot about Michael Moore in lieu of what's happened in the last week. But he was phenomenal, and he was very, very well received by members of the Arab American.
I'm sure he probably pushed the envelope quite a bit too.
He did. He did.
Yeah.
And you know, he sees things that we don't see. You know, he's a very gifted individual, and he's very entertaining at the same time.
Oh yeah.
And we had one of our he's a gentleman that's been with ADC for many years, and he's written. In fact, you may want to have him on your show in the future. His name is Dr. Jack Shaheen, who has written all about the Arab stereotype in the media, in textbooks, and you know, he's especially in movies. He's done many publications, and he's a former professor of communications. And he interviewed Michael, which was great, and he's also a great friend of ADC. We did a beautiful cultural event in the evening where we every year we try to do something representative of music from the Arab world. This year it was from Morocco, and we had these musicians that came in from Morocco and did some classical music from Morocco and also some pop music that we were excited about. It was really a beautiful evening.
Great.
On Saturday, we had many different panels. We had over 40 speakers, you know, at the convention. But on Saturday, we had Ben Jealous, the national
from
president
the NAACP.
Of the NAACP. Oh, yeah. I chaired that panel. That was a fun panel.
Great.
And he was great because he talked about, you know, the election, you know, and concerns about the election. And he talked about political and economic issues and so forth. But it was great. Coalition building, that type of thing, which was great.
Right.
We did. We had the Department of Education in the afternoon. They did a workshop on education, like a bullying, on bullying. And they brought like four big representatives from the Department of Education. And that's been something that's an issue with many ethnic groups, but also it's a big issue in the Arab American community.
Right.
In the evening, we had our gala banquet, and we had close to 1,000 people at the gala at the Hyatt in Capitol Hill. We honored Anthony Shadid. Anthony Shadid, who was an Arab American journalist, you might have recalled that he tragically died in Syria just a few months ago. He's a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist. In fact, our internship is named after Anthony Shadid. Our internship program, because he was a former intern at ADC, but he was a prolific writer on the Middle East and worked with the New York Times. So we honored him, and his family was there, and that was a great event. And then on Sunday, we always kind of reserve Sunday. We do our Palestine panel and Palestine luncheon, and we had Dr. Mustafa Barghouti from Palestine, who has been a political candidate who's run for president in the last election in Palestine, and. So that gives you a sampling of what happened.
Well, it sounds like a rich conference, and I'm sure that our listeners can go to your website, adc.org, www.adc.org, to get more information about the conference, how you can participate. I actually have them in my book. I reference the importance of volunteering and being a part of organizations like the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee. It's on page 26 of my book, so I would encourage encourage you to do that. And before we let you go, Warren, I'm going to open up the phone line because I know I have a wonderful supportive listener, Joanne Fagan and Beverly Munn, who live here in the greater Boston area, and I bet they have probably have a question for you before we let you go. Bev and Joni, hello.
Hello, how are you? I do have a question. I've heard you say that when the Arab families come over, they migrate to Detroit, to the Dearborn, Michigan area. Why is that? I know that most times people come because they have family and friends there, but why did they initially migrate to the Detroit area?
Well, there was a fellow by the name of Henry Ford who wanted to develop an assembly line in Detroit back at the turn of the last century, and that was the reason that a lot of the immigrants came to Detroit. They worked for $5 a day back then. That was a big wage. And not just the Arab community, but many other ethnic communities. Detroit became a microcosm of everybody back at that time, and that was the principal reason. And then, of course, once people start to settle in an area, then they bring their cousins and they sponsor family members and so forth, and it just mushroomed from there.
Now, what was the year?
We're talking the first wave, the late
1900s. Late 1800s.
I would say as early as the 1880s. All the way up until maybe 1930 probably peaking out like around 1910, 12, 1915.
Okay.
And there were about maybe 5,000 a year coming, for all of those years successively, at least, and then it even went higher when it peaked out. So, quite a few immigrants.
Right.
Okay.
But Detroit was like part of the Industrial Revolution. So as Ford was getting off the ground and other industries were there, there were merchants who were coming from the Arab communities around the world, and so they settled in areas like Detroit and Chicago and other northern cities, and then obviously the assembly line took off and then they came as well. Is that not true, Warren?
Exactly. No, that's exactly what happened. And now it's unfortunate, but Detroit has gone through a whole transformation now of, Michigan lost like 1 million jobs in the last 10 years alone.
Yeah,
right.
And the automobile industry has gone through an incredible change, and it's not the industry that it was, and it's much more downsized than what it was.
Mm-hmm.
True.
I have another question, too. The young woman in the Olympics.
I saw her
yesterday on the Today Show when they were asking her about her running, and how did her country feel about it. How do you feel about it? Because she is
who are you talking about? I didn't hear the name
Muslim
of the person you mentioned.
She's from Afghanistan, I think. But I was telling my sister, I said, my God, she's wearing everything that she wears. Of course, she has to have her hair covered, and she has to wear the long pants not to expose her, body in many ways, so I'm hoping that she makes it. But she said that a lot of the women and people over there are really, they hate her for doing that. How do you feel about it?
Well, you're talking about an Afghani woman, which is not part of the Arab world, but in general, there are many Arab Muslim women who cover, and they cover because they feel religiously that they want to cover. They feel closer to God, and that's their right to do that, to cover. There are many Christians. If you go to that, I remember 30 years ago, 40 years ago, when we went to a church, a woman would have to cover going into the church. There are nuns, who cover, who are very religious.
And
there are many women
churches.
And there are many women that are very progressive in the Middle East that cover.
Right.
And some cover and some don't. It just depends on how close they are to, religiously, it's a preference that they make.
Well, Warren, we have run out of time, and clearly this is such an important topic. Beverly, I thank you so much for your question. We'll get to my book next week, but we're going to have to bring you back or bring one of your staff members back in the weeks to come. I do thank you so much. You've given us a wealth of information. Warren David, the president of the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee, thank you so much, and all the best with your organization, too. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Carol. It's been a pleasure. And thank you for the great job that you're doing as far as promoting diversity.
Great. All right. Thank you much. We'll be back next week. We'll have lots more to talk about next week, my book as well. Have a great week. Empowerment begins when you believe in yourself, and I'm excited about all things multicultural. Have a great week or weekend. We will see you later.